Today is Thursday, November 4th, the 29th of Cheshvan. It's not any of my children's birthdays. And today we are going to be learning about Yitzchak and Rivka. I hope I'm enjoying doing these in-depth studies of the Imahot and Avot. I hope you are too. So I'm going to share my screen. Okay, I hope you like the graphics here.
Are
Okay.
you sure you're recording? Because I don't see a thing that says recording.
Oh, I don't record the Zoom. I record it on my phone audio.
Okay.
Okay. I'm gonna plug in my other screen so I can see you all. Okay, so we are this class. I have to give a warning. It gets worse before it gets better. Which by that I mean that we're going to get a little upset. Our feminist sensibilities will be rankled, but then hopefully you'll leave feeling happy about everything. Okay, so this first section is titled Bringing Worlds Together. We're going to just discuss a definition of Rivka's name. So we're going to first look at a pasuk of Malachi, and I'm going to start sound really informed and literate right now when I tell you that this week's Haftorah is from Malachi, Perek Aleph. I'm teaching Navi, which I don't usually teach in the high school, and I'm teaching Ezra and Nehemiah, and I decided I would give them weekly quizzes on the Haftorah so that we would all be in that. So the Haftorah is Perek Aleph of Malachi, who was the last of the Nevi'im. So here's what he says: "Bizarcha lachem yirei shmei Shemesh, and the Son of Mercy shall rise with healing." Tzedakah merapeh, right? Okay. Beknafeha, in its wings. Vitzatem ufishtem keagle mar bak. Okay, so we don't usually see the word Rivka out of any other context besides Rivka's name, but here it's mar bak. Hi, everybody. So they will go forth and be fat as fatted calves. So the mar bak has something to do with cattle. And Rashi there says, Hanichneset l'Rivka l'patet kupila belaz. So they enter the team to be fa they enter that enter the team to be fattened, kopla in Old French, animals tied together. So the word Rivka has this connotation of bringing things together, and we see it this word in the Mishnah, kemalei shtei rivakot. Between them it's talking about. It's in Masechet Eruvim, so it has something to do with Eruvim and the space necessary for constructing an Eruv. So two teams of three oxen each, the words of Rabbi Meir. And then this is an explanation on the Mishnah. I included his bio at the end, but we only have this one little line from him. Haparot kishehen kshirot zo bezo, nikraot Rivka. So two cows, when they are connected to each other by the yoke, right? The ol machut shamayim, the yoke, we wear the yoke of heaven, they are called a rivka. So this idea of uniting two different animals together, that's rivka, bringing things together. And here, I gave you this little fancy family tree, which I did not make, and I think I got it from a non-Jewish website, so buyer beware. So we start with Terach, who had three sons, Haran, Nahor, Avram. Haran has three children, Milcah, Yizkah, or Sarai, and Lot. And Milcah and Nahor marry, and Avram and Sarai marry. So they marry their nieces, who are sisters. And then from Nahor, you see they have a child, Betuel, and their granddaughter is Rivka. So they are first cousins once removed, Isaac and Rivka. So Avraham, this definitely is Tzarichiyun, and we need to look into this more. I need to do some really serious study because there's something about Terach, because it's really his family that all is united. It doesn't really just start with Avraham somewhere. There's some clue to that, because even Lot, we've talked about this before, is going to become reconnected to the Jewish people through Ruth, his daughter, who's going to marry Boaz, the descendant of Yehuda. So something about Terach and everybody being united. So the first step in that unity and bringing the two parts of the family together is Rivka, who is going to bring the children of Avraham and the children of Haran together in marrying Yitzchak. And it's also interesting when you look at this family tree, and this is what the majority of the class is going to be, is that Yitzchak is the first firm from birth Jew, and Rivka is a Balat Tshuva. So this is the first mixed marriage. So Avram and Sarah both, they created this thing, they had this son Yitzchak, they raised from religious, and he marries Rivka, who was not raised in the same way. So it's also a mixed marriage. My husband likes to say he's FFG, from girlfriend, from girlfriend. It's because I became religious before him. Okay.
Could it be, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Could it be the fact that Haran led, followed Avram into the furnace that made him able to get that coming back of family?
Oh, that's interesting. I've always taken it as it exposed his hypocrisy, that he wasn't really sincere. But he did have one side of him that wanted to be sincere. So that probably could be. That's interesting. Okay, so now I'm going to talk about the tzaddik, which I see I spelt wrong on the sheet, sorry, and the Baal Tshuva. And so first we're going to talk about Yitzchak, so we're going to skip ahead a little bit in the Parsha. So Perek Kaf Vav, Vayhi Ra'av Ba'aretz Milvad Harav HaRishon Asher Hayabi Me'Avraham. And there was a famine in the land, even aside from the famine that was in the days of Avraham. Vayelach Yitzchak El Avimelech Melech Plishtim Grara. And Yitzchak went to Avimelech, the king of the Plishtim, to Grar. Vayera Elav Hashem, and Hashem appeared to him, Vayomer, and he said, Al Tered Mitzrayma, do not go to Egypt, because that's what his father did the first time there was a famine. Shchon Ba'aretz Asher Omer Alecha, dwell in the land that I will tell you. In Rashi there explains, you may know this Midrash, Al Tered Mitzrayma, don't go down to Egypt. Shaya Da'ato Laredet Mitzrayma, so he wasn't originally going to go to Gerar, which is modern day Gaza and like all those cities that get hit by rockets, Ashdod and all those places. So he was going to go to Egypt first. So Hashem has to say to him, don't go to Egypt. Just like his father did in the days of his famine. Amarlo, God said to him, Al tered mitzrayma, do not go to Egypt. She'ata ola tmima. You are a perfect burnt offering. Ve'en chutzal aretz kedai lecha. And you should not go outside of the Holy Land. Meaning, because of his experience with the Akedah, or maybe even preceding that, maybe Yitzchak was born this complete, perfect burnt offering, it was not appropriate for him to leave the land of Israel. He had to stay perfect. We have this Midrash Agadah, Vatiana Morat Ruach. This is talking about towards the end of this week's Parsha, when Esav finally decides to marry. He's 40 years old. This is where Rashi brings the famous midrash of the pig. The pig is the only animal that has split hooves but does not chew its cud. Most other animals, like horses and camels and all those animals, are the opposite. So the midrash says that the pig shows everyone its split hooves and says, look, I'm kosher. And Esav, after chasing around women and taking whatever women he wants, decides to follow in his father's footsteps, who also married at the age of 40. Yitzchak was 40. And he decides to marry at 40 also, finally to settle down, as if he's kosher. Okay, so he marries two Canaanite women, which again also goes against his parents' wishes. And it says that it was a bitterness of the soul for both Yitzchak and Rivka, these women that he married, because they worshipped idols. So, mimasim tovim shelo haya osim. So why was it so bitter for Yitzchak and Rivka? From the good deeds that they were not doing. Lo haya maspik she'enam osim tova. And it wasn't enough that they didn't just do good. Aval hayu osim ra'a. They would do evil. Shayu maktirot lavoda zara. They would offer incense to idolatry. Umesakot hashchina mebeito shel Yitzchak. And this caused the shchina to be removed from the house of Yitzchak. I wonder if the miracle of the candles and the challah and the clouds also, I wonder if that means the clouds. Doesn't say. Mizeh hatzad, and from this aspect, yesh amrim shena'aseh suma Yitzchak. Rashi brings two opinions as to why Yitzchak goes blind, or is described as blind in this week's parsha. One is because of the smoke of the incense that they would offer. Another opinion is that During the Akedah, the heavens opened up, and it was the tears of the angels that fell into Yitzchak's eyes. So this is going with the opinion that it was the smoke of the incense that blinded him. But if that's the case, then we have a question. Im kein, lama lo naset Rivka soma? Why didn't Rivka also go blind because of this? Ela Rivka haita milumedet shemaktirin babet aviha. Rivka was used to it because they would also light smoke, have incense in the house of her father. Avodah Zarah, for idolatry. Al kein lo nistamet, and therefore her eyes weren't closed up. Aval Yitzchak shehaya ola tmima, but Yitzchak, who was his perfect offering, nistama. So Yitzchak, growing up in the atmosphere that he grew up in, was much more sensitive to the smoke, and it blinded him, as opposed to Rivka, who had gotten used to it in her family of origin. Okay, so now more of Rivka we're going to see now in the beginning of our parsha. Ve'ele toldot Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holid et Yitzchak. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avraham. Avraham sired Yitzchak. Vehi Yitzchak ben arba'im shana b'kachto et Rivka bat Betuel, ha'arami, mipadan Aram, echot lavan, ha'arami, lo li'isha. So we get a lot of details about Rivka here in this pasuk. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rivka, the daughter of Betuel, the Aramean, from Padan Aram, the sister of Lavan, the Aramean, to him as a wife. Okay, so the obvious question Rashi asks, because we spent all of last week's Parsha, Chayisara, in Padan Aram, surrounded by the family of Rivka, Lavan, and Betuel, and we learned all about them. We know exactly where she comes from. So, Bat Betuel mi Padan Aram, Echot Lavan, v'chi adayin lo nichtav shehi Bat Betuel v'chot Lavan mi Padan Aram. Isn't it all these details already written, that she's the daughter of Betuel, the sister of Lavan, and from Padan Aram? Ela lehagid shivcha. This is to say her praise. Shaita bat rasha, ve'achot rasha, u'mikomo anshe rasha. Not only was she the daughter of a wicked person, the sister of a wicked person, the people of her hometown were wicked people, ve'lo lamda mimaseim, and she did not learn from their actions. So now we have a Gur Aryeh. It's a little long, but I think it's worth reading. So the Gur Aryeh is a super commentary on Rashi, the Maharal of Prague from the 1500s. And he's not commenting on the pasuk, he's commenting on the Rashi. And he's going to explain all these different aspects of where she came from and what it says about her. V'im tamar, achar she'akatuv omer she'aita bat rasha, ma hosif bezeh she'aita achot rasha. The pasuk already tells us she was the daughter of a wicked person. What does it add to tell us that she was the sister of a wicked person? V'chi yoter talmud min ha'ach, mima she'talmud min ha'av. Does she learn more from her brother than she learns from her father? So somebody who is drawn after bad deeds, like idolatry and similar things, is because of three things. So somebody might be drawn to these things because of the power of fear. Shehu yirami ploni v'tzarich lasot k'masav. He's afraid of a certain person, and therefore he has to obey him and do like he does. V'hashini shehu asa me'ahavato mechivato. The second reason is somebody might be drawn to these is out of love. K'mo she'amru, like it says in Sanhedrin in the Gemara, b'inyan avodah zarah oved me'ahavat adam o miyarat adam. So this is a discussion in the Gemara. What if somebody engages in idolatry, either because they're afraid of somebody, and so therefore they have to fall in their actions, or because they love somebody and they want to do it out of their love for them. So there's a whole argument in the Gemara whether that person is exempt, since they're not doing it out of sincere devotion to the gods. They're doing it because of their emotions towards another human being. So one rabbi says exempt, and one rabbi says no, he's liable. V'yesh mehem she'eno oved lo me'avat adam v'lo me'yirat adam. And there are those who don't do it out of love or fear. Elo machmat minhag, shenagukach. They just do it out of habit, the minhag of the place that they are. Kamo she'amru razal, just like our rabbi said in Chulim, goyim shebechutz la'aretz lav ovdei avodah zarahem, ela minhag avoteihem biyadeihem. So they don't hold liable non-Jewish people outside of the land of Israel for idolatry, because they're simply doing what their fathers did. V'hinei Rivka, mipnei she'avia haya rasha, haya la lomod mikoach mora shel av. So Rivka, since her father was wicked, would then fall under the realm of fear because of the power of the fear of the father. V'afalpiken lo lamda. And despite this natural fear a daughter would have for her father, she didn't learn. Umipnei shehaya achi harasha. And because her brother was wicked, v'yadua ki achim ohavim zeh zeh b'tachlit. And it's known that siblings have a natural affection for each other. V'nimshach ha'chad achar ma'aseh ha'sheni machmat ahava. And one will follow the other's actions out of love. V'hi lo asta v'lo chashasha el ha'ava. This didn't impact her love for her brother, in terms of her actions. U'mipnei shekol ha'ir hayu rashim. And because the entire city were wicked. V'haya la liot nimshach achar minhag ha'ir shayu kulam rasha'im. She would have just gone after the whole minhag, the custom of the city, that they were all wicked. V'lo halcha achar minhag. And she didn't go over it just because everybody else was doing it. V'zeh bevadai hora'a al godel tzidkata v'zchut nafsha. And this shows the greatness of her righteousness and the merit of her soul. So you understand the three things. The fear, the love, and the custom, which would correspond to her father being wicked, her brother being wicked, and her place being wicked. And why all three things had to be mentioned to show the greatness of Rivka, that she didn't learn from any of this. V'yesh b'ze od b'ele gimel dvarim. And there's even a greater aspect in these three things. Ki lo lamda me'avia u'me'achea u'me'anshe ha'makom. That she didn't learn from her father, her brother, or the people of the place. Ki l'shlosha elu yesh l'adam yichus v'hitstarfut. These three things, parents, siblings, and your place, a person has a relationship and a joining in it. Ki ha'av hu siba l'toda. The father is the whole reason why she's born. She mimenu yata, from him she came up. V'ha'ach hu chetzi b'saro. A brother is half of your flesh. Sharei hem ki ilu hem devar achad. They're as if they're one thing. Kamosha pershu rabotenu. B'parshat balotcha. This is how Miriam and Aaron react when Miriam gets leprosy. And they daven for her. Etzel ve'ochal chetzi b'saro, because it says, and it's eat halving her half of his flesh, because Miriam is being afflicted with this. Ve'heviu Rashi l'sham, that's what Rashi brings her. Ve'makom ha'mekabelat adam, in the place that receives a person, yikra hadam gam kein al shmo, a person is called on the name of the place where they come from. Ve'hi pershami kulam, and she's separated from all of them. Rotzelamar min ha'pol asher yesh l'kol davar hityachzut. She separated from every activity to which she would have a relationship. Begam min asher hi chelek mimenu parsha. Even that which she is a part of, she separated. Begam min hamikabel, and even the place that she receives, that's the place. Lekol chad yesh hityachasut miuchad v'tziruf bifnei atzmo. Each aspect, the father, the brother, the place, has its own unique relationship with her. Vihi parsha mikulam. She separated from all of them. So it's just a really beautiful elucidation of what Rashi's saying and why all three were necessary to repeat here to show Rivka's greatness. Okay, now for time's sake, to make sure we have time for everything, let's just read some of these in English. Yitzchak was 40 years old, said Rabbi Yitzchak, if it is to teach us that she came from Aram Naharaim, so again it's talking about the repetition, surely it already says from Padan Aram. So what does it teach us by saying the Aramean, the daughter of Betuel, the Aramean? What does it teach us by saying the sister of Lavan, the Aramean? It comes to teach us that her father was a swindler and her brother was a swindler and even the people of her place also. Yet this tzedeket emerged from amongst them. To what is she compared? To a rose among the thorns. You may have heard that expression. It comes from the Song of Songs, chapter 2, verse 2. A rose among the thorns, kishoshana bein hachochim, so is my beloved among the daughters. Rashi there on Shir Shirim. So you probably know that Shir Shirim is seen as a parable, a mashal, of the relationship of Hashem and the Jewish people. And that's how Rashi interprets the whole thing. As a rose among the thorns, which pierce it, but it remains constant in its beauty and its redness, so is my beloved among the daughters. They entice her to pursue them, to stray like them after strange gods, but she remains firm in her faith. And you can see how the Jewish people would fit this description. So now, these next two little sources are very interesting and kind of lead us astray, so I don't want to go into it so much, but it's definitely more food for thought and material for another class at another time. So in the Sefer Gematriot, which you can read about in the biographies in the end, It says Kishoshana Bein Hachochim. So the first letters, almost the first letters of these things, they equal, if you take their numbers, the Shin is 300, Bet is 2, 5 is 7, that's 307. It equals Rivka. Resh is 100, Kuf is 100, that's 200. No, right, sorry. Resh is 200, Kuf is 100, 300. Bet is 2, 5 is 7. So 307. So Rivka gadla ben shnei rasha'im v'lo lamda mimaseim. Rivka is this epitome of the rose among the thorns. She grew up in this. And I heard one class that said that we needed a Rivka in order for a Yosef to be in Egypt. He needed to have that strength of a Rivka, who's a rose among the thorns, for Yosef to be able to survive in Egypt in a similar way. And then even deeper than that, Rav Tzodok HaKohen Milublin, the Chassidus HaRebbe, V'tevat Shoshana B'Gematria Esther, and he says the same Gematria is Esther, is of Shoshana, rose. You can do the math yourself. Kamo shekatav bepri etz chaim. It's quoting another Chassidish Rebbe. V'hi romezet l'knesset Yisrael shehi kishoshana bein hachuchim. So this hints at Knesset Yisrael, the whole assembly of Israel, that is like a rose among the thorns. So let's take this idea of needing a Rivka, needing the Balat Tshuva to come into the Jewish people, because we, the Jewish people, as first seen in Esther, that's the first Galut story, right, post Yosef, of the entire Jewish people being threatened by the Persians, by Haman, that she is the rose among the thorn in that story, and we, the Jewish people, wherever we are, we're the rose among the thorn. And because of, it's in the merit of Rivka that we're able to survive in that way. Okay, so now this is where it gets worse before it gets better. So bear with me and have patience. Overcoming obstacles. So the previous psukim that we read already in the beginning of our parsha, Pasuk Kaf. We read through Pasuk Kaf. So now, immediately, we are told in Pasuk Kaf Aleph that they have fertility issues. So Vayater Yitzchak Lashem. Yitzchak Davin Tashem. Vayater is like a very strong davening. Lenochach ishto, in the presence or opposite his wife, ki akarahi, because she was barren. So for whatever reason, it was known that the barrenness was a result of Rivka and not Yitzchak. Ve'ater lo Hashem, and Hashem accepted his prayer. Vatahar Rivka ishto, and Rivka, his wife, became pregnant. Okay, so now the Malbim. Ve'ele toldot, lumat ma she'amar betoldot Yishmael. Oh, I wanted to skip this. Sorry, this doesn't really add any information, and it's long. Okay, so let's go straight to Rashi. Lenochach ishto. So, let me make sure that that's what... Yeah, okay. Lenochach ishto. So we translated that as in the presence of his wife, or opposite his wife. Ze omed bezavit zo umitpalel. This one stood in his corner and davened, prayed. Veze omedet bezavit zo umitpalelet. And this one stood in her corner and davened. Okay, so it's not just that Yitzchak was davening in the presence of his wife. It's that Yitzchak was davening in the presence of his wife, who was also davening. They were both davening, which is really beautiful, especially when we compare this to how Avraham and Sarah dealt with their infertility in the way Avraham only davened for himself. Here, according to the Pshat, Yitzchak is davening in the presence of his wife on behalf of her infertility. He's really correcting some of what we can perceive as his father's mistakes, that Rashi even says was a mistake, and he is davening for his wife, and not only that, but the Midrash tells us that Rivka was right by, was in the opposite corner, davening for herself as well. They were davening together. So that's where it gets good. And now wait for it. Be patient. Vayater lo. Okay, remember that in the pasuk, his prayer was accepted. So before we knew that they were both davening together, and we just thought Yitzchak was davening and that his prayer was accepted, so that was fine. But now that we know that both of them are actually davening, and that the pasuk still says lo, that his prayer was answered, And Rashi makes it even worse. Lo velo la, his prayer and not her prayer. And then it gets weird. She'en domeh, it's not similar. Tfilat tzadik ben tzadik, letfilat tzadik ben rasha. The prayer of a tzadik ben tzadik is not similar to the prayer of a tzadik ben rasha. Lefichach, therefore, lo velo la, him and not her. Okay, what do we do with this? This is really disappointing. It's really difficult. Why is she being ignored just because she's a Balat Tshuva? You'd think that that would make her even greater. What's going on? So I want to point out a couple clues here. First of all, when you read this, when you take that line of the comparing the two different types of people's prayers, when you take it out of the context of the whole explanation, the prayer of a righteous man, the son of a righteous man, does not even compare to the prayer of a righteous man, the son of a wicked man. Did that just flip it upside down for you? Right? That's how we talk. That's the language. And there are commentaries who point that out. It would seem that if you just take that expression out, that the prayer of the righteous man, son of a wicked man, is so much better than the prayer of a righteous man, son of a righteous man. It doesn't even compare. Okay? And yet, Rashi's using that expression to tell us, lo velo la. His prayer was accepted and not her prayer was accepted. Okay, so now we're going to go on a little bit of a tangent, but you'll see how it all ties together. So this is a Gemara in Masechet Ta'anit. So Ta'anit deals with all of the fast days that would be as a result of famine in the land, of drought. So, which unfortunately happened a lot in Eretz Yisrael. We're sort of losing touch with that now that Israel has all this technology to turn ocean water into drinking water and all these things. We're not as dependent on the Kinneret as we were before. And Baruch Hashem, we're in a very good time right now where the Kinneret is practically overflowing. But these were very scary times in Eretz Yisrael up until we had this technology. If any of you were in Israel like 20 years ago and you knew how conscious people were about water usage. So this is talking about davening. This story is in a time of drought. So let's read it in English. There was another incident involving Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer did not come from a family of rabbis, but he did come from an established frum family. He was from a Balabatish family. His father didn't want him to be a rabbi, but his father was frum, and he eventually accepted him, that he wanted to be a rabbi. So he descended to serve as prayer leader before the Ark on a fast day. And he recited 24 blessings, but he was not answered. Rabbi Akiva, you probably know Rabbi Akiva's background, that he didn't even learn the alphabet until he was 40 years old. It's unclear whether his own parents were converts. His own parents might have been converts. I don't think he was a convert, but he came from a line of converts. That's accepted as fact. So he descended before the ark after him and said, "Our father, our king, we have no king other than you." These prayers might sound familiar to you. "Our father, our king, for your sake, have mercy on us." And rain immediately fell. The sages were whispering among themselves that Rabbi Akiva was answered while his teacher, Rabbi Eliezer, was not. A divine voice emerged and said, "It is not because this sage, Rabbi Akiva, is greater than that one, Rabbi Eliezer, but that this one," I don't like this translation. The Hebrew is ma'avir al midotav. He passes over his character attributes. Okay? Which doesn't sound at all like forgiving. So he passes over his character attributes. Let's keep that in mind. So God responded to Rabbi Akiva's ability to overcome his own personal character attribute by sending rain. Okay, so now we have the Yalkut Yosef, who is the son of Rav Ovadia Yosef Zatzal. And he explained all of his father's halachot and halachic decisions. So these are footnotes that I found this information in. So it's talking about the halacha of Psukei Dezimra and Kriyat Shema, so the morning prayers, and the laws of who should be the prayer leader. Okay? Shaliach Tzibor et mi memanim l'shaliach Tzibor. So who is the best person to lead prayers, if you have a choice? So it says, Hashliach Tzibor tzarich sheyeh hagon. The Shliach Tzibor needs to be someone who is fitting and proper. Shenamar, as it's written, Natna alai b'kola al kol sonatiha She raised her voice against me, therefore I hated her. This is a pasuk from Yirmiyahu, chapter 12, verse 8. So, Ve'amru Chazal, our rabbi said, Zeh shalich tzibor she'enu hagon. This is a prayer leader who is not suitable, meaning she raises her face against me, therefore I hated her. If you have somebody who's a hypocrite leading prayers, God doesn't like those prayers. V'hainu she'ma'apech midah rachamim l'midat hadin. And it even goes so far as to change the attribute of God's mercy into justice. U'me'arer sitra d'dina b'shafa. And it awakens the justice side, which is much more harsh than the mercy side. V'ezahu hagun. So who's proper? She'ya beito rekan me'averot. That his house should be empty of sins. She'ein gezel v'chamas v'beito. That there's no stealing or violence in his home. V'shelo yatza lav shem ra. And that he does not have a bad reputation. And we're going to see later an expansion on that. V'shia anav umiratzel kahal. He should be humble and the congregation should want him. V'kolo arev, and he should have a sweet voice. Uma avir al midotav, in that he's someone who's able to pass over his attributes. V'she'ein bo chnufa, he doesn't have any flattery in him. V'ragil likrot b'torah nevim k'tuvim, he regularly reads from the Bible. And he should be one who's willing to give up on things for the other people. Okay, this was a very long, long footnote, so here's a continuation of it. So now he's going to expand on this idea that he passes over his attributes. We learn from this elucidation, and then he quotes the Gemara about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva and how Rabbi Akiva was answered, and that's what's in the smaller print. V'kvar noda ma she'eriru ha'mefarshim. We know what the commentaries explained. De'im Rabbi Akiva ma'avir al midotav lecho'ora achti hu gadol mi Rabbi Eliezer. That it seems like if Rabbi Akiva is willing to pass over his attributes at first glance, it seems like he's greater than Rabbi Eliezer. V'imkein mahu she'amru lo, lo mipnei she'zeh gadol mizeh. So what does it mean when the Gemara tells us, or the Bat Kol, this divine voice that came out, that Rabbi Akiva is not any better than Rabbi Eliezer? It sounds like this is a better attribute to have, to be able to pass over your attributes. V'chein hiksha b'sefer beit elokim. He springs, it says it's a difficulty in another book. Huva b'chidushei chochmat manoach sham. I think it's a collection of Sephardi rabbis with commentaries, but I'm not sure. V'katav liyashav, and he wrote to settle it, shekol ha-mitzvot she'asar Rabbi Akiva, asar Rabbi Eliezer kamohu. They all did the same mitzvot, and they did it in the same way. Ela, she'Rabbi Eliezer haya b'teva u'b'taiva muchan la'asot tzedakah. Rabbi Eliezer, it was his natural tendency to do tzedakah, to do righteousness. Below hitzte'er al asiyat ha-mitzvot. And it was never a burden for him to do the mitzvot. Ve'asak fimut midotav. And he did as according to his attributes. She'are haya tzadik ben tzadik. He was a tzadik ben tzadik. He grew up in a religious home. Ki avotav hayu mikarei Yerushalayim. His forefathers were the rich people of Jerusalem. Ve'en zo revuta shehem shich b'darkei avotav. And it's no great thing to just continue in the ways of your fathers. Be'etar se'et u'be'etar oz. That is a pasuk from Bereshit Mem Tet, pasuk Gimel, describing Reuven. So he didn't have to try very hard. He grew up with it. Sort of like the makom that we talked about before, only in a good way, unlike Rivka. Ava Rabbi Akiva ben Yosef, mitiv'o mitavato hayanotesh alola sotamitzvot. What was the nature of Rabbi Akiva, the son of Yosef? He was not to do mitzvot. She'Rabbi Akiva haya ben gerim. Rabbi Akiva came from converts. V'hu kavash et yitzro v'asa al korcho. He conquered his inclinations in order to do things against his own will. V'nitzta'er mimasha asa ha'hefech mimidotav. And he struggled with this, that he did the opposite of what his natural attributes were. Hamuchlatim me'aviv, from his father. V'lechein nikra ma'avir al midotav. And that's why he is called someone who passes over his attributes. You see how it does not mean forgiving, according to this explanation. Achar shenilcham im Yitzro, he fought with his inclination, v'hitgaber al midotav hatzviot, and he overcame his natural tendencies, Allah v'nitala, v'higia l'ma shegia. He grew in greatness and he arrived at what he arrived at. Ela dekasha b'parshat toldot. Okay, so now the Yalkut Yosef brings up Parshat Toldot, our Parsha, because we've just had this whole discussion where it seems to be that the person that you choose to lead the prayers for your shul, for your davening, should actually be a Baal Tshuva, that that's the preferred person to choose to lead the prayers. But now he brings up the difficulty from our Parsha. Now, Mar Gavei Tzvilat Yitzchak V'Rivka, where it says with regard to the prayers of Yitzchak and Rivka, Vayater lo Hashem. Hashem answered him. Ugemara yavamot amru, vayater lo, vayater lahem mibayle. So the Gemara says, it should have said, and he answered them. Why does it say he answered him? Lefi she'eno domet, tfilat tzadik ben tzadik, l'tfilat tzadik ben rasha. Because the prayer of a tzadik, the son of a tzadik, is not the same as a tzadik, the son of a rasha. Vehuva barashi b'parsha toldot. And this was what Rashi brings in the parsha. Ulechaora, lefi ha'mivu'ar, Adarava. And now he's saying, this is where I got the idea from. At first glance, it seems like it's the opposite. Tfilat tzadik ben rasha adifa tve. The tfila of a tzadik, the son of a rasha, is preferable, much more preferable. Dilafum tzara agra, because according to the effort is the reward. Share lo ra'a darkei Torah ve'orchot tzadikim, because this person who was the son of a rasha did not see the ways of the Torah or the ways of the tzadikim. The salal uparatz la'atzmo derech chadasha. He paved and burst out for himself a new way. Behu adif tfei, and this is preferable. Vayin b'sefer v'yomar Avram parashat Toldot shepiresh masha amru v'yater lo lo v'lo la haino sheit palala shiulo. So now this is going to be our first clue in how to deal with Rashi. But again, it's going to get worse before it's get better. So here it gets a little better. So he quotes this other book, Vayomar Avraham, who is, if you look at this little print on the bottom, Avram Alevi Patel, who was the father-in-law of Rav Avadya Yosef, so it's the Yalkut Yosef's grandfather, maternal grandfather, and he says, how can we understand this? She davened, she hitpalala, she yulo, that it should be him, that God should answer on behalf of her husband, who was a tzaddik. Imagine Rivka's prayer. God, my husband is such a tzaddik. Answer his prayer. V'lo leze amar sheyu la. But he didn't answer her prayer because what was Yitzchak at the very same time davening in his prayers? Hashem, look at my wife. Look at where she came from. Look at how amazing she is. Answer her prayers. Let her get pregnant. So who does Hashem answer? Hashem answers Yitzchak, but it's on behalf of Rivka. Everyone like that? I like that a lot too. I stuck with that for many years until I started learning it more in depth. Okay? So it's very nice for now. It's going to get worse. So therefore, v'adarava tfilat Rivka hitkabla mipnei shehitgabra al hayetzer hatavuaba. And the prayer of, it's actually the opposite. The prayer of Rivka was accepted because she overcame her natural inclination. Upartza le'atzma derech ba'avodat Hashem, and she burst forth for herself a way of serving God. V'sham tzien l'chochmat manoach. And this is also in this other book and all these other books. Okay, everyone likes that? You're happy? We could stop the class there, right? But we're not, because we have to be intellectually honest. So here's the Kedushat Levi. O Yevorar, ki Yitzchak bikesh b'schut ishto, ki hu chashav ba'atzmo she'eno kadai she'yater lo Hashem b'schuto. So it's saying something very similar to what we just read, that Yitzchak requested it in the merit of his wife, because he thought for himself that he was not worthwhile, that Hashem would answer him for his own merit. Rak chashav sheyater lo Hashem bizchut Rivka. Yitzchak only thought that Hashem would answer his prayer in the merit of Rivka. V'zehu v'yater Yitzchak l'Hashem, Lenochach ishto davka. And this is what it means in the pasuk when it says that Yitzchak davened to Hashem, and we had translated this as in the presence of or opposite his wife, but that's why it was opposite his wife, because it was in her merit that he was davening to Hashem. V'zeo sheperesh Rashi, And that's why Rashi explains, Vayeter lo, lo velo la. Nope. In his merit and not in her merit. Lefisha eno domeh, lefichach lo velo la. The prayer of a tzaddik, son of a tzaddik, is not similar to the tzaddik ben of a, son of a rasha, and therefore it's to him and not to her. Ulechora, masha peresh, lefichach lo velo la, miutar. So if we go with this other explanation that we all found so satisfying, even though none of you responded, I'm sure you found it satisfying, that Yitzchak was really davening because his wife was so awesome, then great. But then we're left with the end of the Rashi, lefichach lo velo la. Therefore he answered him and not her, which just seems to be kind of bringing in this point. No, it was Yitzchak and not Rivka. And it seems superfluous if we're going to go with that explanation, that it was in Rivka's merit. V'hanir'ah d'Rashi ba l'hashmi'enu. So the Kedushat Levi is saying, Rashi came to show us, ki ka'asher katavnu sheYitzchak bikesh b'schut Rivka v'lo b'schuto. When Yitzchak came to request in the merit of Rivka and not in his own merit, so he is saying that that is indeed what Yitzchak was saying in his prayers. Look at my amazing wife. She came from nothing. She's so incredible. She worships you. That was what Yitzchak was saying in his prayers. So he was davening for her merit and not his own merit. L'zeh peresh v'yater lo Hashem. That's why we need to explain, and God answered him. L'fi she'eno domeh, because his prayers are not the same as her prayers. L'fichach lo v'lo la, and therefore it's to him and not to her. Klomar, ma she'ne'ater lo Hashem, that which Hashem answered his prayer, lo daika. No, it was really just about him. Hakol bischuto. Everything was in his merit. Velo bischuta. And as if we didn't understand it already, and the Kedushat Levi has to say, and not in her merit, kikavanato, like he intended. Okay? So it got worse again. We thought we had a good answer. Yitzchak was davening in the merit of Rivka. And the Kedushat Levi is saying it doesn't matter. It wasn't in Rivka's merit. It was all in Yitzchak's merit. Okay? And it's because the prayer of a tzaddik, son of a tzaddik, is not like the prayer of a tzaddik, the son of a rasha. Okay, so now I'm just going to tell you there's another halacha before we get to the finale of this year, which I don't have for you on the source sheet. It's in a book. But there is a notion among the poskim, the halachic deciders, that when it comes to davening for the community, the prayer of a Baal Tshuva is better because of what they've gone through. But when it comes to individual prayers, davening for themselves, the prayer of the tzaddik, son of a tzaddik, wins out because they have the merit of their forefathers that the individual Baal Tshuva does not have. Okay, and that's going to be relevant also to the Lemachar Atir, who I've quoted to you before about Sarah. If anybody's interested and they want pictures from the book, I'm happy to email that to you so you can let me know. So what he says is fascinating. So what's the difference between the prayer of a tzaddik who's the son of a tzaddik and the tzaddik, the son of a Baal Tshuva? And we see this in Rivka and Yitzchak, and we see it in the reaction to the answer to their prayers as well. How so? So what would Rivka be davening for? Having come from the family that she came from and the place that she came from, Rivka would have been davening not just for any child, but a perfect child. Can everyone see that? And maybe you can relate to this from your own family circumstances in terms of what you, your expectations for yourself, for your children, whatever it might be. As opposed to Yitzchak. Yitzchak grew up in the home of Abraham and Sarah. He only knows perfection. He only knows God's will. He only saw his parents wanting to do God's will to the extent that he saw his father try to sacrifice him, right? So he understands that God's will takes precedence over anything. So Yitzchak is davening for a child according to God's will. You see the difference? Rivka is davening for a perfect child. Yitzchak is davening to for whatever Hashem wants to give him. And that is why he answered Yitzchak's prayers and not Rivka's prayers, because Hashem, in Hashem's wisdom, knew that it wasn't just going to be a Yaakov, but it was also going to be an Esav. And that's why, if you continue, I'm going to share with you. If you continue in, oh, that's not us, in the Psukim, then you see that after this, Rivka struggles. Rivka has questions. Yitzchak doesn't have any questions. Rivka, the Midrash tells us, she feels in her womb that as she passes places of Avodah Zarah, she feels one side of her stomach trying to burst open. And as she passes the Beit Midrash, she feels the other side trying to burst open. She doesn't know what's happening. It doesn't bother Yitzchak, the idolatry, like it bothers Rivka. So Rivka goes to inquire. And God said to her, two nations are in your womb, and two kingdoms will separate from your innards. In one kingdom will become mightier than the other kingdom, and the elder will serve the younger. So the Lemacharat here, Rav Moshe Breslover, I'm going to read to you from it. V'tshuvat shem l'Rivka v'shem Hashem. So he's, Rashi explains that it wasn't actually God who answered her. It was, she went to Shem, Noach's son Shem, to inquire before God, and this is the answer. Shnei goyim b'vitnecha v'shnei lomim me'echa yipardu le'um me'um mi'amatz v'rava v'od ha'atzayir. That's that pasuk in Hebrew. Umnam, Ye ben Rasha. Aval tachlito. So even though you will have a Rasha, you will have Esav who will be wicked, he has a purpose. Ule'um ile'um yamotz. So that means one kingdom will become mightier than the other kingdom. Tkumat hara ye rak benifilat tov. When the evil comes up, it will be only when the good is going down. Viradato Hamusarit, when it's an ethical going down. Im kain, if this is so, tachlito shel hara, the purpose of the evil, l'shamer et shlemut hatov, is to preserve the fullness, the perfectness, the perfection of the good. And then when Yaakov dresses up like Esav with the fur to get the birthright, Yitzchak says, hakol kol Yaakov, and Hayadaim Yidei Esav. The voice is the voice of Yaakov, but the hands are the hands of Esav. So Rav Moshe Breslover, and I didn't check if it's actually spelled this way in the text, but he says, Hakal Kol Yaakov. Instead of Hakol Kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, he spells it Hakal Kol, Hekel Kol Yaakov. When the voice of Yaakov gets light or weak, then it's the hands are the hands of Esav. Kidei Lahachziro L'Kolo Hashalem. Esav's hands become strong in order to return his voice to its fullness. And it's sort of like the voice of the Jewish people, the voice that we put out there, and the ethical and all the good things that we do. So this is the pasuk of the first altercation we have with Amalek. It says that Amalek went to war with Israel in this place called Rifidim. Be'et Rifayon Yadayim min HaTorah ba Amalek. So the Midrash does a play on words of Rifidim as Rifayon Yadayim, a loosening of the hands from the Torah. That's when Amalek came. Lehasia et Yisrael mi Rifidim ulehavim haviam lemaamad Har Sinai, in order to make Israel go from Rifidim and to bring them to Har Sinai. So that's why Amalek, they were getting a little too slow, a little too lazy. They weren't making the progress they needed to do to progress to Har Sinai. And that's when Amalek comes. Chuvazo henicha et data. This answer allowed Rivka's mind to be put at ease. Gam hi hevina shehaviat Esav hi shlemuto shel Yaakov. She also understood that the existence of Esav was the completeness of Yaakov. Kimaraz bishmo, as it's hinted at in Esav's name, because Esav in Gematria is Shalom. It has the same numerical value as peace and completeness. Lechein shuv lo hitlonana. And therefore, she no longer complained. So I hope we've come to some satisfying conclusion about what was going on with Yitzchak and Rivka in their minds as they were davening for children, and why Yitzchak was answered, how we can understand that at the same time, It's in Rivka's merit, and there's a huge merit and a huge upside to a person who is not the child of tzaddikim in their davening. But at the same time, the upside of the tzaddik, the son of the tzaddik, is ideally to daven for Hashem's will. And the Baal Tshuva isn't satisfied with Hashem's will. The Baal Tshuva wants perfection. And in this case, Hashem knew he couldn't give over perfection. He had to give over an Esav, because that very Esav and everything Esav represents brings the perfection to the Yaakov. All of the bad things that happen to us, all of the evilness in the world, is really a challenge for us as the Jewish people to step up to our completeness, to our role to be an Or LeGoyim, a light unto the nations. And we need the Esav in the world to goad us on to do that, to continue to do that. So may we experience a time when we don't longer need the Esav, when Mashiach comes and we're all in our perfection in and of ourselves. And may that time come soon. Thank you, everybody.